Each week, I take a thought leader out to lunch, and we chat about business. Today, our guest is Dave Price, who's been working the TV news business in the Des Moines Metro for the past 18 years. Dave is currently the political director, anchor, and managing editor at WHO TV 13. Coming up, we're talking about his second book, Caucus Chaos Trump, plus the business of broadcasting, the changes he's seen, the struggle to stay on top of everything, and some inside stories about some of the interesting folks he's covered on the political beat. And right now, months ahead of the Iowa caucus, all of it matters. Join us as we go out to lunch with Dave Price.
Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of AARP Iowa. Real possibilities for people of every age. AARP Iowa and Country Vet Naturals. Loved by pets, trusted by owners. CountryVetNaturals.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. We're out to lunch with Dave Price. He is the anchor, managing editor, and political director. I may not have that exactly in order for WHO TV 13 News here in the greater Des Moines Metro. Dave, thanks for doing this with us.
Of course.
This is fun.
It is.
You know, a restaurant. We're at the grill, at the Arrange Grill and Golf, and you know, we've got the music going in the background.
Music, food, talk. What more do you want?
Exactly. I'm really interested in so many things that go on in your life relative to your job, your business. But I want to start out by acknowledging the fact, and we're going to talk about this later, you are now the author of not one, but two books.
That's right.
When do you find time to do all that?
It takes some planning, and, you know, I didn't have a hard deadline, I suppose, which probably
sure.
made writing the second one a little easier, but I think there's time if you want there to be time. You know, my wife and the two kids are asleep, sometimes I write at night. Sometimes I write early in the morning. I think I've realized I'm better doing that, going to bed earlier and getting up early. Our dining room overlooks a big picture window in our dining room looking out. And it's an awesome, we don't live out in nature or anything. That's got to look the other way for that. But so we're just looking at my neighbors across the street. But when the sun's coming up, and I remember the one morning I was sitting there and it was a little hazy, a little foggy outside. You know, it was still morning. So I don't know what time that was, 5:30, 6 o'clock, something like that. And there was a doe across the street on the sidewalk. And I looked out, and so I stood up. And I need to, of course, mention that I work in television, so video and pictures are vital. That's important to this story. So I sit there. What do I not grab as I stand up to watch this beautiful sight? I don't have my stinking phone with me.
Of course not.
I'm mesmerized by this deer, and it's almost, maybe I was delirious, but it was almost like this slow motion gallop down the sidewalk in front of my neighbor across the street. So it dawns on me, oh my gosh, I have to get video of this. So I go back to the table, grab my phone, and you know, this dumb phone's lock, and you've got to get your thumbprint there and open it up and all that stuff. Short of it is I missed this beautiful sight. It was already down the street by that point, and I shot video, and it was terrible. You couldn't really see anything. So I missed this glorious
golden
sight.
Opportunity.
But it was also a reminder that I think that's my sweet spot, getting up early, riding like that, so I can ride for a while, then go work out a little bit and have breakfast. And that's when you find time.
Yeah. It is amazing when you find that time. Now, the two books that you've written, one was Caucus Chaos. That was the first book. It was talking about the 16 caucuses.
That was more about the 12.
The 12,
12
caucuses.
Election.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do this every 2 years, man.
Exactly.
this is a longevity.
And I may.
Yeah, right. And the most recent book that you've just released, by the way, is Caucus Chaos, but it's got the Trump factor, yes?
And the Trump is the factor, the dominant factor, the dominant thread throughout the whole book.
Yeah.
It was my first experience covering him, really, in 15, I guess, for the most part. I had done a radio interview with him, I think in 14, for WHO Radio one time. But my experience is covering him, how he built a following, taking us through the 2016 caucus and general election, presidential election. And then what it's been like since he's been president, both in politics, the media, our state, how he built that following, how he tried to keep that following. It has a lot of deep soul searching by Democrats as far as what went wrong, really, since Obama got elected, and then how they plan to rebuild.
Yeah.
So this one is a lot more. The first book, which was totally fun to write, was more of a look back at the 2012 cycle. This one, while it does look back at 16, is much more, here's what happened, here's what it means, here's where we're going.
Uh-huh.
So it's a lot more look forward, which was a lot more enjoyable. I don't want to trash the first book, of course, because I want people to buy both
of them.
But I think when you read them, you will see they have a lot different feels.
Well, sure. One's a historical relevant piece, you
it
know,
is.
That talks
it
about
is.
The past, and one is much more immediate because we're in that space right now.
And this one was more, I mean, truthfully, this was more an experiment, this second book, I would say, and only in the sense that I don't feel like my job is to give opinions. Not my present role. I don't think I should do that. Now, if you want to talk baseball, I will give you opinions till the cows come home. But
well, a kid from Bellevue, Illinois, you've got to be in with the St. Louis.
Bellevue, right. But definitely.
Yeah,
raised a Cardinal fan.
Yep.
My grandma used to, when she was a teenager, used to babysit Whitey Herzog
of
for
course.
All
well,
the Cardinal fans.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes, it's ingrained in me. It goes back generations. But this book was, Caucus Chaos Trump was a lot more of my experiences and analysis, in my mind, there's a separation between opinion and analysis. And I don't do opinion, but I'm comfortable doing analysis now.
Emma just got here.
Well, hello, Emma.
Hello, Emma. How you doing? Good. We can go ahead and order, I guess. Yeah, I think we're probably, this is early in what we're doing, but we might as well get there because Emma just popped over here.
And good timing.
And anytime Emma's hanging around, we want to listen, right?
Sure.
So, Emma, how long have you been here?
I've been here since January, so not too long.
What's the best thing about being at the Range Grill and Golf?
I really like my coworkers. They're all really sweet.
And the tips ain't bad either.
Tips aren't too bad, no. Pay some bills.
All right.
Can I put you on the spot?
I suppose.
This Torrey Pines Bison Burger, good?
Oh, everything's good. Yeah, that one's pretty popular, though.
What's the most popular burger, would you say?
Most popular burger? Probably our bison burger, I would say.
The Torrey Pines or the Range?
Probably the Range one. But then the Torrey Pines is like, if you like mushrooms, then that one's pretty good.
I do. That's me right there.
Yeah.
There
is that what you're going to get?
That's what I'll get.
All right. I was going to do that until I saw caramelized.
No onions, please.
Until I saw caramelized onions.
Yeah, we're opposite. I don't do onions.
And,
he
and,
does.
And I do onions. Yep. Dave doesn't do onions. So I'm going to do the, what is the Range? Range Bison Burger, no cheese, and I think you wanted a salad, Dave?
I do. Is that, can I get a
salad?
What do you have?
We have ranch blue cheese. We have a really good Range vinaigrette that we make. We have lemon and herb, oil and vinegar.
I'll try that Range vinaigrette.
Range vinaigrette?
Thanks.
How would you like it cooked?
Probably medium.
Okay.
I'll do medium and a salad and the Range vinaigrette. As well. Does that work?
Yeah. Do you guys want your salads out first or with your meal?
Whatever works. We're easy going.
You tell us. All we will say is yes, dear. Whatever you tell
whatever
us
you want,
to
we'll do it.
I'll be surprised then.
Sounds good.
Anything else I can get for you?
That's good. It.
Thanks, Emma.
Thank you much.
All right. Watch for photographs of the lovely and talented Miss Emma. As
she did well under pressure.
She did, didn't she? Now, here's a microphone. Just go ahead and speak into it.
Exactly.
What? All right, let's go through this this book for just a bit because I'm really interested in some of the findings going forward. I was just at, because we kind of share some interest in politics, and even though we do business on the Business News Hour, politics and business seem to intersect today
much more than
what they ever have before, or it seems that way. So I was at a 3rd District Rural Voters Summit on Saturday. And I was listening to people talk about what happened with the Democratic Party and why they fell apart in 16 with the gubernatorial race and also some of the state houses that they weren't successful in getting. And I heard all kinds of suppositions. But one of the things that I don't know if you've run across this or not, but there was a study just released by Iowa State University on the 22nd of April, and it was talking about not the kitchen table issues, but it was talking about racial identity. It was talking about immigration identity, fear of losing identity. It was more of identity concerns from rural voters than what it was kitchen table, like health care and jobs. Are you finding any of that?
There is. I think my experience would maybe be both of those things. And the identity concerns people expressed differently, at least in the conversations I have had. And I also think that some of the media narrative and the partisan narrative can misinterpret in some cases what people are saying about that. And that was one of the things we noticed talking to people for the book, in the sense that, look, there's no doubt we have racism and sexism, right? I think it is very misguided and incorrect for some Democrats to dismiss Trump's following and followers as easily as saying they're all a bunch of racists and sexists. I don't think that's the case. Of course some people are, and you're going to find Democrats that way.
Sure.
I mean, that's just the way some people are. But some of it is, and maybe even some people can't quite put their thumb on it, but things are changing and it scares them.
Yes.
Especially in these smaller towns. And no doubt you have some of them, and you'll talk to, and the deeper you get into it, they blame these foreigners for coming in here and taking their jobs and being willing to work for less money, and now they can't get by anymore. But some of them are also just fearful that they grew up there, their kids went away to college and never looked back. And we have one of the chapters of the book actually is about this. There's a professor kind of who researches some of this. And it isn't necessarily that they hate life back home, but they go off to a much bigger city and say, wow, the
wow,
movie theaters,
look at this.
The bars, the restaurants, the civic center, whatever it is, the entertainment options. Maybe it's high-speed internet that they don't have back home, right? It's just things in life they can't get back home. They can more easily get wherever else they are, whether it's in this state of Iowa or some other state. And mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, aunt and uncle, who's ever back there, they're scared.
Yeah.
They don't know who's going to buy the farm when they can't do it anymore, who's going to buy the house, or what's left of the town. The school already left, or it looks like it may close, or it merged with three or four other communities. I think it's too easy to just gloss over this and say that Trump tapped into people's sense of white nationalism, and when whites were the majority, and you know, still are the majority here, but white men were in charge, blah, blah, blah. Of course, that resonated with some people who may have taken it that way, but there are, I believe, a lot of other people, they don't see it that way. They just have fears for the future, and some of them could be, you know, we'll see if Trump can actually do anything about them, right?
Well, you know, when I read that study, and it was a second study of its of a very similar nature that took a look at the identity, the fear of losing identity, losing a quality of life, losing so much that had grown up with in rural part, and then not to have, which is interesting, not to have a major party speak to those issues with solutions that could be helpful to them. And, you know, I think, and again, I don't do politics, but you view that from a, you know, from a ways away, and it becomes pretty clear, you know, if the Democratic nominee for governor didn't go out and hang out with rural people, you know, and ask those questions, it's got to be tough. So,
without a doubt.
All right, let's move on.
Okay.
We've talked about the book, which, by the way, is available all over the place.
It is.
And we will have links, by the way, to,
well,
I suspect that we will have links to Amazon.com and anybody else that has.
CaucusKS.com.
Hell yes. We've
got to have our own website, man. It's the easiest way to do it.
Exactly. We don't have to rebrand anything. It's
right
there. And you don't have to share the wealth.
There's that, too.
There is that, too. Well, it's a business show, man.
That's right.
Dave Price, ladies and gentlemen, from TV 13. He is the anchor. He is the political director and managing editor there. What does a managing editor do?
I think organizations probably do it differently. And look, at some places, in a lot of places, a managing editor is a full-time content-only position where you can... In my field, you're looking at the television news content, the digital content, the social media content. I unfortunately still really love reporting, so because of my greed, I don't want to give that up.
Sure.
So this allows me to reach into that arena, but still keep my feet into the reporting and anchoring side of it. But basically, it's. I'm looking at both our daily and longer-term coverage plans. What are we covering? What should we be covering? How are we covering it? And, you know, it's never as much as I want to do because there are only so many hours in a day. But, frankly, it's the same way with reporting and anchoring. I mean, there's just only so much you can do, so you have to divide up your day. This allows me to do a little bit of everything, and I think that fulfills me a little better.
If I were to guess, you, because your life has been spent in journalism, that would be the go-to. That's what you'd get juiced about.
It is.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, and asking the questions. So my question to you is: what makes a good journalist? What qualities are necessary for somebody to be successful in that field?
I think two things. I think you need to be curious and you need to be able to listen. I think when you watch, and it's easier with TV because there's video, so I'll use that as an example, but I think you can tell the reporters, anchors, moderators, whatever the format, when they have their list of questions before them and potentially even memorized. And they are check, 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 check down the list. I asked this, I asked this, I asked this, I asked this, as opposed to listening. And look, doing it the way I do, there are definitely times then when I'm going back to the newsroom and I think,
shoot,
dang it, I wanted to ask blah, 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 and I didn't get that in, but it's because she said this, and it was either incomplete, it was just a garbage talking point. It was perhaps a change from something that she has said before, or it was a, oh, wow, kind of thing that I had never heard before. So sometimes you go where the interview takes you.
Sure.
You know, I think I do try to have a game plan of where I want to go and things I want to accomplish, but I really think you have to be able to listen to what that person is saying. And I'm naturally fascinated by people, to be honest. I'm a people watcher. I'm a people studier. And all of those things make the job remarkable.
Let me ask another question, because this, I have a personal reason for asking this question, because my bride, when we go out in a social experiment, you know, a social event someplace, I can't turn it off. So, for example, we'll go in someplace and we'll be talking to people, and I've got 50 questions for somebody. You know, is you?
I do, and one of my brothers. I have two brothers and a sister. One of my brothers makes fun of me for that because he's not nearly as social as I am. But I am genuinely fascinated by people, how they think, why they think things, their life story, where they want to go. And that's why this job is so fascinating, because, I mean, most of my time I spend on politics, of course, but you get to meet so many different people, and it just makes every day new, and it's remarkable.
I tell people that I've been affected with ADD for a long, long time, so that's why I like what I do, because every day is absolutely different.
That's right.
I'll have to get Georgie and Emily together, and then they can go talk to each other.
Yeah, I'd be curious what Emily thinks of my talking to everybody. I'm sure it's annoying, but
I suspect, you know, it's just kind of our brides put up with it.
Yes.
Dave Price, ladies and gentlemen, political director, anchor, and managing editor for TV 13 News. You've been doing this a long time. You started in newspapers and radio, and you've done TV now. How has journalism, how's the business of journalism, because this is a business show, how's that changed in your time in the field?
I think, you know, I think there are, it's good and bad, right? Technology is the biggest change without a doubt. It gives us as a reporter access to information so much more quickly, which is a good thing. The pressure is, though, that, you know, it used to be I'd come in at 9 o'clock in the morning, whatever, and my story was for the 6 o'clock news. That was the big newscast. And then, and some people had kind of shifted, maybe did the 10 o'clock newscast as well, but whatever. Those were two big ones. Now it's the deadline is when the deadline is. And so there's a lot of pressure to oftentimes post, publish, broadcast incomplete stories, because there is this insatiable demand for news and scoops and be first, and it can be really dangerous. Now, as I sit and talk to you today, we had a little scoop this morning.
Yeah.
That Cindy Axne, the Democratic congresswoman from the 3rd District, was going to run for re-election and was not going to run for the U.S. Senate next year, right?
So that's a big story.
And that had been the speculation for a while. And in this case, you know, I'd been talking about it and working on it for a while, but it was, you know, once you get it confirmed by Axne, then that's sort of the story, right? I don't need to verify that in a lot of different ways. So that one's kind of an easy one. But when you have other things that are multifaceted or multi-layered, let's say you make an allegation about something. Well, you know, the old school way is, you allege that I egged your house or something, whatever it is, right? And, you know, I would contact me. I would contact your neighbor or whoever you accused of doing this crime. Now there just seems this kind of rush of Michael Libby claims that his next door neighbor.
Sure, sure. So
I don't
right
know, and
away,
that's kind of a weird example.
No, I get it.
It's
totally.
Just incomplete.
Yeah, so totally we rush to the headline.
Yes.
Rather than doing what needs to be done.
The reporter.
Yeah.
Or you say something that is just not right and there's no fact check to it. Stuff just gets repeated. Like, that just can't be the way things work. And so there's a lot of pressure to do that. With TV, we do a lot. We've been able to, fortunately, unlike newspapers, which have really, really struggled, we have found a way, while you have a lot more choices for news and TV channels and all that kind of stuff.
Food's here, Dave.
Hey, perfect.
Yeah. Oh. This
hold
is
that thought.
That is the Range Bird?
It is.
Uh-huh.
No, this
and
is not pine one, whatever.
Torrey Pines.
Pine, exactly.
And this is the... Oh, yeah, this
actually,
is looking
glass,
good.
I use a glass of water, please. Thank
right.
you.
And we have the salad as well.
I do, indeed.
So this is... yeah, this is all right.
It's all right, we're... meal.
It is. We have lots of stuff in front of us. We got microphones. We got tape recorders. Well, not tape recorders. That's another big change. In you know, it used to be that people would go out with 50 pounds worth of gear, 60
right.
pounds worth of gear.
None of the photographers are complaining about the lighter cameras these days. They look better. They're easier to use. They're much lighter, much quicker.
Are you ever surprised at how well we can do things with a phone?
Oh, no doubt. And we will use, you will see some of our stories include video from phones sometimes. And if you have a nice phone, you can't hardly tell.
Right.
I mean, it's remarkable how good it is. It's the audio that tends to be the worst part of it. The video is usually a lot better than the audio on
and
the
I've
phone.
And I've got a secret for you. As when we conclude this, it's called ChemaFun. It's a Bluetooth wireless lavalier mic that you plug into your phone.
Yes.
It's perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. That really helps a lot.
All right. We're going to chow down. And, you know, because we don't want this to get cold.
Exactly.
And we'll be right back with more. As we go out to lunch at the Range, Grill, and Golf with Dave Price. Yummy, 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 yummy.
Mm. Bison Burger was good.
Bison Burger. Yeah. Did you notice a difference? I mean, between a hamburger and
I
a
did,
bison
actually.
Burger, you think?
I don't know that I'm sophisticated enough to properly describe it, but I did notice it.
I thought it was good.
It was.
I, you know, and the salad and the homemade dressing and the stuff. Yeah. All right. We are at Range Grill and Golf, and we are doing Out to Lunch with Dave Price. He is the managing editor, the anchor, and the
political director.
Political director. Sorry, the big
tough
one.
To fit on a business card, you know.
But you managed.
I did. Yeah. I did. You're right.
It's very cool.
It's a big card.
Yeah.
Or small print.
No, it was right there, you know? And I'm going, wow, look at this guy. He's got all these titles.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's all right. We're talking about the business of television news and how things have changed, how they've remained the same, and some of the interesting things that over Dave's career, what he's run into. And so now we're going to talk a little bit about particulars of the business industry of television. How does it work? What are the dry? I know, right? management, you can't. Oh, he is the managing editor. So how do you make decisions relative to what you cover, what you don't cover, and what gets eyeballs and what doesn't? I mean, that's at the end of the day, isn't that what drives viewership? Is getting the eyeballs on whatever story it is? And is that how you equate success? Because it's all paid for through advertising.
And you do get almost real-time confirmation or opposition to some of your decisions in the sense that we do not get overnight numbers in television here. Some of the largest cities will get that. But we could get research within a month, I think it is now, because we have a different system than we did before. So that makes it a little differently than in the really, really big markets where 10 o'clock news, you do your thing. I think by the next morning, you already know how many people watched.
Right.
And, you know, and that's good and bad. You get to find out what drives interest. But, you know, the downside could be that you try to pick what are the sensational stories that can get people going. I do know that, you know, we have two main editorial meetings during the week at Channel 13, one in the morning around 10-ish and another one around 2-ish in the afternoon. And you can look. We have a huge television monitor, computer monitor in the back of the room, and it will be the real life, the current metrics of what people are looking at online.
Now,
There could, you know, there might be a little bit of a difference between what people want to watch on television and what people want to scroll through on their phone, and which is primarily how people are looking at it now. Most of our digital traffic is from smartphones. You know, that's a big switch.
Sure.
It used to be you know, fired up your PC and you went at it, but it is by far people on their phones. And so because of that, people's viewing interests are different, their patterns are different, you know, and you're probably like this too. There are certain things perhaps that you can devote your undivided attention at a certain time of day or evening, and other times you just want quick bites.
Right.
You know, you'll see times of day when there are more people on there because we can see the metrics in the newsroom, so we know when more people are on. But, you know, if you think about it, if you're sitting in your cubicle at work, you're probably not going to watch a longer piece. Sonny Heitz, who's in at Channel 13, did this gut-wrenching story last week. This woman opened up about what it's like for her husband's slow decline through dementia.
Saw it.
Oh, my gosh. It was awful.
Yeah.
And it was so raw. It was both, I don't know how to describe it. It was so sad, but also almost so beautiful. I don't really use beautiful a lot, but I think it sort of was her devotion to her husband. I mean, it was just such amazing love. And
in some of the roughest of times.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
You know, he would not know who she was and, you know, has lost the ability to do very basic things like brush his teeth, buckle his belt, all kinds of things. And there this woman is his primary caregiver, and it was remarkable. But it was 6 minutes and something. Now, that's a testament to our management, frankly, because
allowing that to happen,
a lot of television stations would not do that story, or they do it in a minute 15, and which would be a worthless story. They Sonia and the two photographers who helped her do it, who worked with her on the project, they let the story breathe. I mean, it was agonizing. But as great as that story is, that may not be a story that you're going to watch at 9 a.m. when you get into your cubicle. It's probably one that you're going to save for after work. So you're sitting on the couch at 8 o'clock, because that's a big, if you look at the metrics, 8 o'clock is a, 8 p.m. is when it jumps. And you start to see, you know, you've had your dinner, maybe you walk the dog or you went for a walk after work, whatever it is, or after dinner rather. If you have kids, maybe you got them ready for bed or thereabouts, you know, you can see that 8 to 9 that we spike back up there. And that might be the time where you can be a little more focused on, I can watch this 6-minute piece. So we have to look at those kind of things about when are people going to consume it? How are they going to consume it? But to, that was a long-winded way, but I want to circle back to what your original premise of the question was. Our thing is interesting and engaging. What are people, what will people find interesting and engaging? And what will matter? And, you know, I'm not saying we succeed in every single story we put on the air, but that's what the goal is.
And when you're taking a look at what will matter, and there's a great amount, the number of pitches that I suspect that you get on a daily basis are wide and varied and many.
No doubt.
Because, and one of the constraints that you have is that you got, what, 15 minutes maybe at tops? Because you've got commercials, you've got the
depending on what the newscast is.
Right. You've got the weather, you got the sports, you got all that stuff, and then you're supposed to sandwich about 10 to 12 minutes worth of news in there. And so the time crunch becomes very confining, I would think, yes?
Very much so. Yeah. And so you can, you know, in a perfect world, you look at everything you have, you divide up and say, we will do this in the 4 o'clock, this in the 5, this in the 6, this in the 9, this in the 10. Of course, we have a noon show. We have a two-hour morning show. This is what the digital will be. This is what we'll do on social with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And they have different forms,
sure,
different formats, different lengths, different characters, a different visual presentation. And that's the way you want it to be done. When I talk to groups, I often say that I think it would be very eye-opening to people if we broadcast our editorial meetings so that people
Absolutely.
Could see how decisions are made. You almost can't really do it for competitive reasons,
sure,
especially if, you know, we have something that we're working on that's a scoop, of course. You know, you don't, we don't want KCCI or anyone else
to
see
it. You could give it a code name.
A code name, yes. We'll talk in code. But I think it would be fascinating to people if they could see it, because I would like to think that we give deeper discussions about certain things more frequently than many people might assume. And along with that, though, a lot of the decisions come down to your available staff that day, where the story is, what time it is, what type of story it is, so how much resources will that story need? There are certain stories that you can turn quickly, some that you can't. Sonia's story was they sent two different crews there because they wanted to be there when the husband got out of bed, and they wanted to be there at bedtime that night. And that's not a typical work day. So they spread it out, and they invested in the story. And those are the kind of stories that can really make a difference. And frankly, those are ones that elicited feedback from viewers and more potential angles, right? My mother-in-law watched the story because she was in town, and I was sitting next to her on the couch when we watched it. And I had paused the story before we started because my father-in-law's mother, my wife's grandmother, also had dementia. And so I wasn't sure my father-in-law even wanted to watch it because I thought it would be too raw to watch. And he said, no, I'm fine. And we watched the story, and my mother-in-law said, this is why you can't do it yourself. And her mother is 99 and a half,
wow,
so she knows, you know, some physical challenges that her own mother has. And, you know, that's a whole other thing, right? That's a whole other piece that we could explore, is what are you supposed to do? So I think all of those conversations are worth having. The technology of all of this gives us immediate feedback from viewers and consumers, which I think is very beneficial.
So to come back to that whole story, wouldn't that give rise, those types of stories that we were just talking about, that Sonia did, Wouldn't that give rise to perhaps a news magazine format sometime during maybe the weekend or sometime outside of the traditional broadcast? Say, okay, hey, look, we're going to do a news magazine with some of these really interesting long-form stories. It's going to take a half an hour, and we're going to put it someplace.
There's no doubt that could be a possibility. And as you see, as we were chowing down food here, I was talking about newspapers. So I think their decline probably happened a lot more quickly than television. We still have advertising. You know, once the newspapers lost the classifieds, obviously that was a huge money concern for them. And you're seeing just drastic cuts in that industry for the last 10, 15 years. And they're a shell of what they once did. Now, competitively, that's a huge opportunity for television. And there was a Pew Research Center study just earlier in April that came out. And this is, sorry that this sounds very self-serving, which I suppose it is, but if my numbers are right, 52% of those they surveyed said they rely on local television news for their daily local coverage. And I think print was 11% or something like that.
Well, and the other thing, let me just break in here for just a moment. Try to find local news on the radio.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you know,
I think local radio was about 4%, if I remember
right. Yeah, and because it ain't there. You know, you take a look at the radio dial, wherever it happens to be, and they import so much of this.
And that's where I started. I started in radio.
Yeah, so much of this content out there that, you know, it's the national talking heads and all this other kind of stuff, and you have very little time to actually focus on those local news stories.
That's why I feel like for us in TV, that's our future, is that we have to
absolutely
be so focused, laser focused on relevant, impactful local news coverage. And we have to make sure we don't lose sight of chasing whatever the shiny object is, because people have so many other sources for their national and international news. They're always, you know, those issues impact us locally, of course, but we have to dominate local news coverage for us to remain relevant.
You know, it's interesting. I was just in New York. I spoke to the New York Press Association, which is mostly community-based newspapers. I mean, for example, in Brooklyn, there are 12 to 15 daily or weekly papers there. Are you kidding me? But I think what's really stunning about that, and they're all making money. And so the question is, okay, what are you guys doing? Well, they're not chasing the shiny national ball. They're really focused, hyper-local news stories that seem to react to their readers. And you know, I think you and I would both agree. You know, we take a look at the newspapers that Iowa used to depend on, and they tend to have forgotten a lot of those things. And that's sad for an industry that is so important. We're out to lunch with Dave Price. We're really talking about the minutiae of this thing. So anyway, news magazine. Put that on the
Put that on the list. Possibility.
Go talk to management. Says Libby says do a news magazine. Well, look at the success of 60 Minutes, for crying out loud. There you go.
No doubt.
Seems to work. When we talk about local news, I know it's tough to really make decisions, but focus, because the Des Moines Metro is so big now. I mean, we're knocking on the door, they say, in another 10, 15 years of a million people here. Metro versus extra metro news stories, because there's a ton of stuff going on outside of what used to be commonly referred to as the Golden Circle. How do you cover that?
No doubt. And that is a challenge, and that is something that we have to continually strive to do better. If you're doing sheer eyeballs, you do every story in Des Moines, right?
Sure.
It's the biggest city. And I just talked to a city council member this morning, in fact, for a community dealing with housing situation. And that's affordable housing, something perhaps you've thought a little bit about.
I have.
And
it wouldn't have been a metro story, would it?
It was.
I was with the mayor of that community just last night, as a matter of
interesting
fact.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But affordable housing is something that is clearly relevant to I dare say, every community yes. in our state, right?
Yes.
So there are ways to do things that have a little broader appeal, even if you are doing it in some smaller town. Now, I will say, for a self-serving plug here, Roger Riley at Channel 13 is a machine at finding untold stories in Iowa's heartland. I don't know how he does it, and I think because he's half crazy, he just gets all his stuff, loads up in the car, and will drive anywhere and then some to get a story. That's how he does it, because he works his butt off. He goes into those rural communities and finds stories that just aren't being covered. And people talk to him because Roger's such a just a great, decent person. But we have to do more of those. And we've had those conversations where it's so easy to chase the fire, the shooting, the whatever. And I'm not downplaying the relevance of those. And quite frankly, when I look at the metrics of our system for our digital properties, those tend to be ones that have high interest.
If it bleeds, it leads.
And you click on it when you're sitting on your phone, you go, oh gosh, that happened, and you click on right. it, you know. As far as whether it has any staying power, unless you're personally impacted by that, then, you know, perhaps you can argue that it doesn't. But we have to make sure that we're giving you a well-rounded blend of news so that, you know, I don't want you at 10 o'clock, especially if you go to bed at 10:30. No offense to Jimmy Fallon, but, you know, if you watch the news and then go to bed, like a lot of people do who have to get up in the morning, do you want your first 20 minutes outside of Ed's forecast? Do you want all shootings and death and destruction? Because you're going to go to bed thinking, oh my gosh, I don't want to wake up. You know, it's the end of the world. Yeah. I better start repenting to make sure I've, you know, I'm going where I want to go. And so we have to find that perfect blend, I think, as an industry. You need to have relevant, we need to have investigative pieces, we need to have pieces like Sonny did, human experience stories about what is it like to deal with a spouse who is in the decline. Those are very relevant to a lot of people and should spawn all kinds of other conversations, but we have to find that mix. But we need happy stories too. We need stories of people overcoming, people who do really cool things. And those are, it's very difficult. You have limited resources, but that's our challenge, I think,
limited
is to give you that mix.
Right. Limited resources, limited time. Podcast?
Yes.
Are you there yet?
I'm doing that as well. I've done three so far. I have one that I haven't put together yet. That is something our company just started to get into.
Yeah.
We haven't really trumpeted it a lot yet. We're kind of getting a few in the can, so sure. They're there. I've sat down with a few of the presidential candidates, and so we can get a little deeper into things. I talked to just recently the state legislator from Bon Durant, who he and his wife won $202 million.
Yeah, how about that?
Brian Losey and Mary Losey. But they won Powerball, and yet he decided he wants to go be a state legislator. He used to be a Bon Durant city councilman. Bon Durant's a little community outside Des Moines. And we sat down with him and talked about things that we normally could not get into in just a typical statehouse interview. He is a legislator because he has a family member who has dealt with mental illness and substance abuse. And that is his mission, man. That's what he's focused on. That is the thing he wants to accomplish. However many years he's going to be at the statehouse, he wants that. That's his mission. So we got into, would you rather be anonymous for winning $202 million? Don't you get hit up for money all the time? He got into, no, he doesn't want to, and he explained all that. He explained what it's like to tell people, no, we're not going to give you any money. He explained what it's like to be a politician. He started a grocery store, he and his wife in their little tent in Bon Durant, because they didn't have one. Just fascinating things. Yeah, podcast is a whole other new venue.
It's a whole different deal.
And I'm just starting to get into it, so totally fun, though.
Yeah, and as you get into this world of podcasting, you know, it's a dichotomy, because we're just talking about the lack of attention span that people have, and then we're sitting here talking about, oh, let's do a 30-minute podcast about
right.
something. But But if it's of interest
to people.
There
are people who want that.
Exactly.
No doubt. And that's fascinating to me because I like getting deeper into things, so it's fascinating.
Well, there you go. So that's why we're doing this.
Exactly.
Dave Price, ladies and gentlemen, we're out to lunch at the Range Grill and Golf talking about the business of television and television news. You've been doing The Insiders for quite some time. Why?
It's a love it.
Yeah. Because, again, we go back to that long-form interview opportunity. Yes. Yes?
And I have, as anyone who knows me will tell you, I am constantly evaluating, is this working? Is this not working? Let's try this. Let's try it. And I drive people to work nuts. We have messed with the format. It has. I know I have. It's a 30-minute show. I have about 20 minutes outside of the commercials, and it's in five segments. I'm allowed to do the math however I choose. So I've messed with that and have experimented with that a lot. So if you watched recently, you will find that first segment typically is the longer one where we can get a little deeper into things. And I've learned that a half hour in TV seems like a long time, but it's really 20 minutes, and it's broken into segments, and there's never enough time.
Never is.
Never enough time. And so because of that, rather than do this scattershot, try to get into 10 topics, we've really limited the number of topics we get into because I think we get more substantive discussion about it.
So you've been doing the political world here for a long time. Some of, if you can, some. Thank you very much. Emma's back. It's always pleasant.
With a refill.
It's always pleasant to see Ms. Emma.
I'm going to be all caffeinated
That's
up.
That's right. Most interesting, this is really going to be tough because sometimes I can't remember what I did the day before yesterday.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anything stand out to you, surprising that you've done on The Insiders or in pieces as you've followed candidates over the past almost two decades across Central Iowa?
There are just so many experiences you get both in front of the camera and away from the camera. For me, this goes back a long time ago, but I had somebody who gave me an advice for dating to watch how my date treats. So if we go out to dinner, how does she treat the staff? Is she polite? Is she friendly? And I, because of that, always love to observe people. So I watch how politicians treat their staff, how they engage with the public when there's not a camera there, how they talk to me or to anyone else without the camera versus with the camera. There are some who go into some kind of robotic mode when the camera is on. So collectively, that's given me all kinds of experiences, but a few that quickly come to mind, Barack Obama, watching him get a haircut in my boss's office, because Meet the Press, when Tim Russert was still alive, recorded the show at Channel 13, and they needed a holding room, and so my boss graciously gave up his room, and so there the senator was getting a little trim before he went out there, which, of course, was fascinating. With Tim Russert, I talked and I idolized him, and I loved his interview style. I got to watch him do a show and to see how comfortable. I mean, he can bust your butt, but without being mean.
Right.
I mean, he was persistent, but he was respectful, but could still. I mean, when you're going off on a tangent on your talking point as the guest for the fifth time, I mean, he could jump in there to say, all right, you know. But watching him, the way he handled himself during the commercial breaks, still very respectful. He puts his guests at ease. And then I was in the hallway with him. This was in 2008, before the 2007, so leading into the 2008 caucuses. And he said, how's the south side of Des Moines going to go?
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Are those south side Italians, are they getting behind Hillary? And I remember sitting there as my dad would say, with my teeth in my mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't...
Dumbstruck.
I was dumbstruck, and I was thinking, remember in Quick Bites when I said lions, why I said that book? That is my constant reminder that you're never, you never know enough. And I remember thinking, dang, I didn't have a clue. And I was thinking, I got to work a lot harder.
And here's a national correspondent.
Who was smart enough to drill down like that because he knew the geography and the demographics of Iowa to know that that was going to be interesting about who was going to win over those South Side Democrats. So that story, and that obviously that stuck with me because I always think about, you never know, there's always one more person who has one little nugget of information that would help my reporting be that much more well-rounded. For more the fun side, on my phone, because I transferred over from my last phone, I still have a voicemail from Anita Perry, Rick Perry's wife, the former First Lady of Texas. And I'll give you the brief version of the story, but I interviewed Mrs. Perry in the Channel 13 newsroom, and we finished the interview, and my phone went off because I stupidly forgot to silence my phone. So, of course, I profusely apologized, picked it up, and I'm fumbling around like a buffoon to silence it. And this was the first time he ran. And so my screensaver came up, and it was my son, who was only about a year and a half or so at the time. And she said, oh, who is that? And she has that sweet Texan accent. And I said, that's Hayden. And she said, how are things going? And I don't really know why I did this, but I answered the question honestly. And the honest answer was, at the time, my son was hitting my wife a lot in the face. And it really upset my wife. And he would do it a little bit with me, but not as much as my wife. And why in the world I told her, I have no idea. It's because I was super tired because he wasn't sleeping well. And I think we were sort of at wit's end about, my gosh, what is wrong? Like, did we somehow make him do this? We don't hit him or anything.
And here's an experienced person.
Exactly. And so we talked about it a little bit. 2 days later, I had a voicemail from Mrs. Perry. And she said, Dave, I don't know if you remember me. And I was just thinking, come on now. You said Anita Perry, I know who you are. And she said, I was thinking about what you told me about your boy, and I was talking to a girlfriend of mine last night who's a speech therapist. And she said that there's this developmental stage where kids can go through where, and in the case of my son, most likely his brain is developing much quicker than his speech was at that point.
So it's frustration.
And so he's just frustrated. He so badly wants to tell you something, and he's excited to tell my wife something. So he's hitting her because he doesn't know how else to express. And Mrs. Perry said they went through that with their son, Griffin. And he even had a little bit of therapy when he was a young boy and grew out of it quickly. And I'm pretty sure she said he only went through it 3 or 4 times or whatever. So I checked the voicemail and I called her back. So we had a long conversation. But I thought, this woman is either the most calculating politician in the worst way ever, or that is one of the most thoughtful, genuine things I've ever had anybody in politics do, and I've never erased the voicemail. I only have a few voicemails on my phone. My dad's last voicemail that he left me, Mrs. Perry, and one from my son when he called me one day. And I don't think I have any more on here. And they've transferred from one phone to the new one or whatever. But I will never forget that. And when I would interview Governor Perry, he always asked about kids. He always showed me pictures of his grandchildren and their dogs. And it was just pleasant.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with politics, but it's just one of those stories that I won't forget. And those are the ones sort of beside the reporting that really stick out.
Well, those opportunities to connect on a human level, those are just as if you are reporting on a subject that connects on a human level, how much more important that is for people. I mean, we all want to be noticed, whether or not we're going to the grocery store, and not for who we are, what we do, but just as individual human beings and how that how that makes us all feel, and it makes us feel better.
And I really feel like I use them. I'm different than I used to be. In 04, I remember I was offered the chance to go to lunch with Elizabeth Edwards, and I turned it down. That was my first presidential really covering. I moved here in 01, so I missed the 2001, and I had covered it 2000 when I lived in Alabama, but I didn't not at this, you know, it was Alabama, so right. It doesn't have the relevance Iowa does. I did, cut as an aside, cover Judge Roy Moore, though, when he got elected to the Supreme Court.
Could be interesting.
That was. So I hung out with his family that night in 2000, but anyway, I turned it down because I thought, I don't know if that's really right to go to lunch like that with a presidential candidate's wife, blah, blah, blah. And talked about it with some mentors, and now I totally have a completely different view of that. And have had coffees and lunches with some of these current presidential candidates, and have in the past too. And I feel like you get a little different relationship with them. I can find out a little bit better about what they're all about, what they think about, how they tick. And I use that in my questions. So with since I was talking about Rick Perry, I'll just say that so we can sort of fold in sports or other things that are relevant to his life that I think will help him explain his politics, and I think it'll make it a little richer, our discussion, and it just, hopefully at least, it gets it a little bit out of the normal boring
talking points.
Yeah,
that
I ask you about this one, you respond, talking point, blah, 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 blah. It's a little less predictable. Hopefully it covers a little new ground.
We've been out to lunch with Dave Price. Dave, thanks for opening up.
You know, thank you.
So exactly why we do what we're doing is exactly what you just said about taking the time to get to know somebody and then exploring those many facets that we all have. And so, good stuff. And thanks for taking the time to do this,
man. Of course. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Dave Price on a host of topics as we went out to lunch at the Range Grill and Golf. And our thanks to Steve and his crew for hosting our Out to Lunch segments this past month. We will have links to that locally owned restaurant up on our radio blog, along with links to Dave's book site, caucuschaos.com, and WHO HD TV 13. Thanks again to Dave for taking the time out of his schedule, which now, during the run-up to the Iowa caucus, is insanely busy. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us that put this thing together each and every day, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing falls to Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett from Jam Good Productions. For Dave Price and our entire crew, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful day. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.